www.duplicationconnection.com.
The 7 astronauts who will lift off aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery on Thursday have arrived at the Kennedy Space Center for final training and preparations. The launch is scheduled for 9:35 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday night. New Jersey health authorities are trying to locate the source of an E. coli outbreak, which has sickened at least 19 people so far, some of them after eating at a local Taco Bell, which has been temporarily closed while that investigation continues. 7 people are in the hospital. Pfizer stock is down following news that the company has stopped its development of a new cholesterol treatment drug, which was designed to succeed Lipitor when it loses its patent protection in 4 years. Pfizer says that it ended the development of the new drug due to an unexplained number of deaths in late-stage trials. This announcement comes on the heels of one last week that the company is laying off 2,200 of its salespeople. The Bank of New York is taking over Mellon Financial in a $16.5 billion all-stock deal. The new company, to be called the Bank of New York Mellon, will be one of the world's largest securities servicing companies. And Station Casinos, which runs casinos catering to Las Vegas residents, says it's received a buyout offer from its chairman of $5 billion. Gold is unchanged this hour, trading at $650.60 an ounce. Silver is at $14.23. Light sweet crude down 81 cents a barrel, trading at $62.62. All the markets are up on Wall Street. The Dow is higher by 71 points at 12,264. NASDAQ is up 35 at 2448. And the S&P 500 is up 10 at 1406. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 past.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. A lot to talk about today. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Feel free to call and discuss anything. Here's my not-so-short list of topics. There's a lot of things to discuss. One is the Don Rumsfeld secret memo, apparently just before the election. He wrote a CYA memo, which, as we all know, stands for covering your rear end, that basically supported, about a year later, what the Democrats have been arguing all along. That is a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. What does the memo mean, and what does it say about who's really in charge here? Could it actually be that there's someone more pig-headed than Don Rumsfeld, and his name is George Bush? Meanwhile, in Lebanon, a civil war is about to begin. The streets are full of people. Hezbollah, supported by Iran, is about to take the government over. Iran and Syria very much want to control Lebanon, which used to be a diverse country of many different peoples. And so Hezbollah, the local Shiites, who are a minority of the population, have been armed. The majority of the population that supported the Democratic government, I think, made a terrible mistake in not joining with Israel and the rest of the world in disarming Hezbollah, which, of course, has been a United Nations resolution for a couple years now, and now I very much fear for democracy in Lebanon. Meanwhile, what a difference an election makes. In October, in fact, George Bush was saying that if the Democrats win, the terrorists win, and America loses. Now historians are debating, is George Bush the worst president in American history? The second worst? One says he's only the fifth worst. Well, we can argue about whether he is in the bottom 5 or bottom 10%, but what a difference an election makes. Meanwhile, a very interesting study came out of the Federal Emergency Management Association. You remember FEMA? FEMA that was supposed to help the victims of Katrina? As Sheila Crowley, president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, has said, quote, "I cannot name another circumstance when so many public servants have worked so hard to provide such dehumanizing and shoddy service to citizens who are entitled to basic help and deserve fundamental respects." Computer errors, forced recertifications, bureaucracy, contradictory notices. It turns out that less than 0.25% of all families in need after Hurricane Katrina have reached the federal cap of $26,000. Basically, you have a government that says government can't work and set out to prove it. Meanwhile, there's a Republican lame duck session. The do-nothingest Congress is becoming even more do-nothing, having already determined to work less than the famous do-nothing Congress under Harry Truman. They've decided simply not to do anything on the 8 of 11 spending bills that were supposed to be finished before the election. The idea is to kick it over to the Democrats because Republicans, as we know, love to cut taxes but don't like to cut spending, and therefore leave us with huge deficits for our children. There's an interesting school integration case coming before the United States Supreme Court involving schools in Seattle and Louisville. Here we have the opposite of Brown versus Board of Education. You have schools that are trying to desegregate. And the question is whether conservatives and the Supreme Court will prevent them from desegregating. I want to talk about this, these decisions. It's a very, very important decision. And if you don't know the details about it, I want to give them to you because it should not be confused with affirmative action. As far as I'm concerned, what these schools are trying to do is simply try to prevent America from continuing to slide into the racial ghettoization that we had until the 60s and 70s, and we've been going back towards ever since. Meanwhile, on the Intelligence Committee, I think that the Speaker-elect, Nancy Pelosi, has made a tremendously good decision in choosing Sylvester Reyes over Alcee Hastings, the congressman who is the former impeached federal judge. I recommended this decision, a month ago on this show, and I'm very proud that Nancy Pelosi's taken my advice. Congratulations. I think the Democrats are doing everything, at least in their leadership so far, perfectly. Don't worry, there'll be plenty for me to criticize once they take power. John Bolton is gone. Rumsfeld is gone. Robert Gates is going to be replaced. Heck, I know he's better than Rumsfeld, but could we maybe have someone as Defense Secretary who didn't fix facts around the intelligence? It's coming out that Gates did that as well. Meanwhile, in the seat in Florida to replace Katherine Harris, it looks like the clearest example of election fraud. 18,000 voters in Sarasota, 15% of that Democratic part of what is mostly a Republican district, we are led to believe simply refused to cast a ballot for member of Congress. No way to prove it, however, because there's no paper ballot. One of the things that I pointed out just before the election was that those of us who have been supporting paper records for years, as I have, had less to fear from the election of 2006 because in some 15 states they had really a perfect paper system, and another 20 states, making it 35 total, they had some manner of paper anti-fraud protection. And so I thought we could get a mostly fair election. I did point out that two of the worst states in the country are Florida and Texas, and it's only fitting that Florida seems to have the best case for a hacking election. Hopefully now with the Democrats in charge, we can actually close the door and finally have fair elections from now into the future. So there's a lot to talk about. The blog is full of lots of discussions that have kept me weighted down, everything from Israel to evolution to the Federal Reserve to tax law to something I want to discuss this evening, which is the interesting exchange between Senator Jim Webb, elect of Virginia, and George Bush when Bush asked about how's his boy doing in Iraq. So there are a lot of things to discuss. If you want to discuss any or all of these issues or bring up something new of your own, you're always welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Whether it's the school integration, the lame duck Congress, FEMA, Rumsfeld, Lebanon, or how the heck we get out of Iraq, this is your day to call in. I hope you do call in. Otherwise, I'm just going to go down this list and talk about, well, as many of these things as I can in the next hour. And then tonight on the television show, we're going to be debating a Republican strategist, Mike Lane, one of my favorite people to debate. And we're going to start on this interesting exchange between Webb and Bush. So I hope you'll tune in for that. That will be replayed in full on the horn tomorrow at 2 at the regular time. So 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with the Week in Review right after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe in what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right, they include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number one? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what you
want? There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So we are in Washington. It's a very, very quiet Washington, even though Congress is in session. Careful, don't talk too loudly. You might wake up a sleeping Congress. You might recall this is the Congress that met less days over the course of its last 2 years than the famous do-nothing Congress that Harry Truman complained about in 1948. Well, they're going to do even less now because they've decided not to take any action on the 8 of 11 spending bills that they just didn't pass this year. You see, the Republicans have a problem. They claim to believe in small government, but they don't. So instead, what they really believe in is huge debt. Republicans love debt, and they particularly like when poor people have to pay the debt. The idea is the best way to transfer money from the poor to the rich is to keep taxes on the poor high, to keep taxes on the rich low, and to give huge subsidies to extremely rich corporations like oil companies and pharmaceutical companies and the like. So they're embarrassed about their own spending bills because most of these spending bills are sort of the natural, normal things to run a government. Let's not forget that the red states take far more from the country than the blue states. Remember, next time you hear some Republican talk about a tax and spend liberal, the Republicans grab more of our national dollars than the Democrats do, and they do so through things like farm subsidies and lots of things that go out to the rural America, because Democrats, by and large, represent urban and suburban areas, and today about the only people that are still Republican are rural areas and, of course, the racists in the South. In fact, speaking of the racists in the South, there was an interesting article done that I'm going to talk about later on tonight and tomorrow on my debate shows that shows that if you take away racial attitudes, if you do, you know, a standardized statistical regression analysis, which sounds like a mouthful, but basically it's a way of measuring attitudes in polls. If you look at people's views and you take away for their racial attitudes, you find, interestingly, that people are equally likely to vote for Democrats and Republicans. If you, for example, take someone who's pro-life, okay, is against supports the view that abortion should be criminalized, whether the doctor or the woman put in jail for having an abortion. If you take away people who express negative attitudes toward blacks, you'll find that the pro-life people in the North are equally likely to vote for Democrats or Republicans as the pro-life people in the South. The same is true for pro-choice or gun control or any issue you want. If you take away racial attitudes, then basically the South is no more likely to go Republican than the rest of the country. The problem is, of course, that racial attitudes are very strong in the South, and that explains why the Republican Party is becoming a Southern party. And just about that, New England today is solidly Democratic. I think we'll take back New Hampshire's two senators in the next election. In fact, there's only one member of Congress in all of New England that is still a Republican, and that's the very moderate Republican, Chris Shays. You've got the Mid-Atlantic states, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, all solidly Democratic, even the border areas of Virginia. The Midwest is coming back to the Democratic Party, and of course the West Coast always has been. And now even the West, the Libertarian West, Libertarians across the country are seeing that the Democrats are far more Libertarian than Republicans. Democrats believe the government shouldn't make your private choices, that the government shouldn't decide, what religion you should be, or what you should do with your own body, or who's your proper marrying partner, or what things should be prohibited from your reading. We don't believe in Big Daddy government, and neither do libertarians. And so what's interesting is that that's something where the libertarians are coming home to the Democratic Party. We do, however, believe that while the government shouldn't dictate what you do with your private life, that it should help you when you're in distress. If you're homeless, if you're jobless, if you need an education, we Democrats do believe that the government should help you out. And the clearest example of the difference between Democrats and Republicans, of course, is FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association, after Katrina. Democrats believe that the government should do its best to help people get back on their feet, to help people find homes, to help people who've lost their homes either find a new place to stay or find a job. And it's interesting because a new study has come out, and the study has shown, this is a FEMA study, disclosed by FEMA, I'm sure they were embarrassed to say it, that less than 0.25% of all households affected by Katrina will reach the cap on post-disaster aid. FEMA's policies, anti-poverty advocates say, combined with inadequate computer systems and support staff, unfairly pushed thousands of disaster victims towards homelessness, slowed the recovery of New Orleans, and saddled cities such as Houston and Austin with housing crises. Now listen to someone who disagrees. Ronald Utt, a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, which is, of course, a conservative think tank, quote, "From a human suffering point of view, I think it's good news," Utt said. "Lower income people would have to pay higher rents in New Orleans. It's just as well that they're somewhere else." The problem, of course, with them being somewhere else is that they just put more needs on the people somewhere else. And one of the things FEMA has done is use bureaucracy to make it very, very hard to apply for payments. Even if you got rental payments, they made you reapply. A lot of people didn't know you had to reapply. They didn't think they could get payments. They lost payments. Then, by the summer, 4 out of 5 people were being denied. There's all kinds of agency rules that were broken. If you live across the country, you couldn't get aid. Of course, I mentioned the computer systems weren't working. Some were actually required to provide evidence that they made housing payments before the storm. There's only one problem. The evidence, whether written documents or computer documents, was often destroyed in the flood itself. Kind of reminds me, frankly, of those Holocaust victims in Germany that said, "Oh, sure, we'll pay you for your property. Just show us the title," as if they had kept it with them in the concentration camps. It's that kind of thing for Katrina victims. There are public records. Use those, but don't expect someone to have saved their receipts when they're busy escaping a flood. Indeed, U.S. District Judge Richard J. Leon recently called the contradictory notices from FEMA Kafkaesque. So this is what you get when you have a government that doesn't believe in governing. And what's interesting is that now historians are debating. A very interesting article in the Washington Post about how bad a president Bush is. Is he the worst president in American history? One historian argued he was. One said, well, no, he wasn't as corrupt as Nixon. One historian argued that he was really only the fifth worst. And the brightest news for Bush was the historian who said, well, his term's not finished yet. I guess he could do better. Clearly, Bush is a failure. And one of the things that's interesting about Bush's failures is that he continues to stay the course. George Bush was in Europe just this week arguing that we don't need to remove any troops from Iraq, when even Don Rumsfeld is sending him secret memos saying, in effect, the Democrats are right. We need to pull out. Now, Rumsfeld didn't say the Democrats were right, but he did say we need to pull out. When Don Rumsfeld, architect of the worst mistakes of the Iraq War, says we need to start withdrawing troops, you have to wonder if George Bush was actually telling the truth when he said, you know, I'm not going to leave until Laura, me, and Barney, his dog, agree it's time to leave Iraq. Well, news has it that Barney just the other day was yelping, screaming, and knocking over things with his tail. I think your dog's trying to give you a message, George. Time to leave. It's time to leave. Well, now that Rumsfeld's out, we're replacing him with Bill Gates. Excuse me, Bob Gates. Don't want to confuse the two. Bob Gates, who, interestingly enough, in his CIA nomination, he, of course, is a former CIA intel chief, nominated for defense secretary. And in his nomination hearings, they talked about his time with the CIA and how he was fixing facts around the intelligence. Fixing intelligence around U.S. policy. What he was doing, let's be clear, U.S. has a certain policy. And instead of presenting to the president all the intelligence that comes in, good and bad, that supports the policy, that doesn't support the policy, he only showed the intel that supported the policy. He did exactly what the Downing Street memo said, fix the facts around the policy. And yet, am I saying we shouldn't confirm the nominee, Bob Gates? No. He's better than Rumsfeld. That ain't saying much. Heck, Bush's dog Barney is better than Rumsfeld. But wouldn't it be nice if one day, just on a lark, the president were to appoint someone who saw it as his mission to provide truthful information to the president to make accurate decisions based on actual intelligence? I mean, we're spending tens of billions of dollars on all these satellites. I mean, we're spending thousands of agents' time ruffling through America's phone bills. It's expensive. Heck, wouldn't it be nice if we actually used the information instead of making up stuff to make the president feel good? Because, you know, making up stuff is a lot cheaper. If you want to hire someone to make up stuff, to say the situation's great in Iraq, we're having lots of progress, let me suggest Baghdad Bob. Remember him? He was Saddam Hussein's lackey. And he was the guy that was saying everything's going just well for Saddam Hussein. I'll bet for, I don't know, $100 an hour? Probably less than $20,000 a year. We could hire Baghdad Bob, throw away our intelligence. We're not using it anyway. And Baghdad Bob would tell the president whatever he wants to hear, just like he told Saddam Hussein whatever he wants to hear. Well, apparently we're doing that with Bob Gates, except that we're spending tens of billions of dollars on this intelligence while Bob Gates is busy throwing it in the waste can, telling the president what he wants to hear. Well, at least the Don't Bring Me No Bad News school is working for the president. As I said, as soon as Rumsfeld puts out this secret memo suggesting that actually the Democrats were right, he's out of there. And now we're going to put in someone who can keep being a nice yes man for the president. It's getting harder, though. His yes men are getting kicked out. John Bolton of the United Nations is not going to make it. The president did everything but stand on his head to get him confirmed. And, well, the Democrats are taking power. It's simply not going to happen. As I said, it is the Week in Review. I want to hear from you. Any topic you want to bring up is fair game. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When I come back, I'm going to talk about three very different issues. One is the choice of Sylvester Reyes as the chairman of the Intelligence Committee by Nancy Pelosi. One is the increasing dangers in Lebanon of civil war. And I definitely want to come, probably the first thing I want to talk about when we get back, is the school integration cases and what they have to say about our future, black and white. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It is the Week in Review. All topics are valid. You want to talk about Iraq and Lebanon, the school integration cases, what's going on in Congress, or the last corrupt election, hopefully ever, in the United States, the seat to replace Catherine Harris in Florida. Whatever you want to talk about, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275 or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Sarge from Mississippi, how are you, sir?
How you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a lot to talk about, as you know. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to give you an update on the Katrina situation.
Yeah, let me know, because I was talking earlier in the broadcast about these FEMA reports, and it's just as ugly as ever. What have you got to report?
I talked to a fellow down in Bay St. Louis, which is the county seat of Hancock County. It's not a city per se, but it's one of the bigger towns.
Right.
And they still do not have a grocery store.
In the whole county?
No grocery store in the city of Bay St. Louis. They have to go out of town to a neighboring town to buy groceries, or they buy them from Walmart.
Is that because basically people have just left the town, that the small businesses can't compete anymore?
No.
What's going on?
It's just that the money hasn't been put into rebuilding. This governor has allocated grant money to his cronies, and little of the money actually goes into rebuilding anything. Jackson County is still in the same shape it was in.
When are the gubernatorial elections in Mississippi? Are they on the presidential years or the off years?
They're on the off years.
So this guy was just elected?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Are you getting a new governor? Tell me what's happening.
I think he comes up next year or something. But yeah, next year. But he's just, it's just a big cover.
Is this Haley Barbour? He's your governor, right? Haley Barbour?
Yeah. He's as crooked as he can be. Of course, you know of him, so I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. He's a long Republican hack. He's been around a very long time. He's a lobbyist. He's the perfect example of somebody who's made millions of dollars bilking the taxpayer for billions to his clients.
Yeah, and
but
I
think you're getting a new governor now, right? A Republican, but a new one, is that right?
No, he can run again. This is his first term, so he's got one more term that he can.
So now, why is it? And this kind of goes back to what I was saying in the first half. This study, and I'll cite the study for anyone who wants to read it. This study is called "Old Times There Are Not Forgotten: Race and Partisan Realignment in the Contemporary South" by Nicholas Valentino and David Sears. There's an interesting this regression analysis, and they found, for example, that if you control for racial attitudes, a white Southern man who calls himself a conservative is no less likely to chance a vote for a Democratic presidential candidate than a Northerner who calls himself conservative. Pro-life, hawkish Southerners, again, if you control for racial views, are going to vote just like Northerners. But the Southerners were much more likely to answer these questions, things like calling blacks lazy. If only blacks would try harder, they'd be as well off as whites. When you look at things like that, racial attitudes, you find that white Southerners are twice as likely than white Northerners to refuse to vote for the Democratic presidential candidate. It's these political scientists' view that race is still the main issue in the South and keeps people like white Southerners who are suffering back in Jackson County or Bay St. Louis that they don't vote for Democrats to keep out corrupt people like Haley Barbour because of racial attitudes. I want to know if that confirms with your experience, Sarge.
Well, it is to a large extent, but the biggest thing I think, and this is just my opinion and I might be a little off, is the religious mentality. Of course, the churches, Southern Baptist was built on racial discrimination.
That's why it's the Southern Baptist. That's why it's split from the American Baptists or Northern Baptists.
Right.
It was to keep their slaves.
And so that's the big thing that really forms a lot of opinion here. And the people have I don't guess the people really are as aware of it, but the media here is so controlled. I mean, even when I was a kid growing up here, the media was controlled back then, the local stations and all. And so it's, the people have been fed a steady diet of trash. And
right.
you could ask just about any of them, do you Do you know where Mississippi ranks in unemployment? I don't know, but I reckon we're pretty close to the bottom. I don't know.
Yeah, they know they're at the bottom.
Yeah. And
they know they're at the bottom in education and everything else. And one of the things that interests me is that if you ask a Mississippian what's going on, they're probably not likely to mention a corrupt governor or a Kayleigh Barber. They're probably likely to blame, I don't know, black welfare or something like that.
Yeah, well,
here's
something that's going on, too, is Barber is snowballing the people. He's making it seem like he's doing something, but it's the federal government that's getting in his way. And so people are giving him a pass. Because they're saying, well, it's not his fault. It is.
I blame both of them. I don't think, you know, at some point when everyone's pointing fingers at everybody else, someone's to blame. And so Mississippi, which, you know, supported George Bush and probably still is giving, I don't know what the approval ratings for George Bush are in Mississippi, but if they're higher than 50% and Barber's rating is higher than 50%, then I guess they don't blame anybody.
Well, you know, his Bush's ratings here are under 50%.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, they're 30% in the rest of the country, but I'm glad to hear they're under 50 in Mississippi.
Now, as far as Barber goes, I really don't have a feel on him. I can't make out where he stands. But this is how control of media is. One of the announcers on WLOX TV on Good Morning Mississippi got up one day and said that today is the anniversary of Hitler rising to power in Germany, and he gets up and he does a Nazi salute and he starts laughing and he sits down and the co-host is laughing, and they don't say anything about the horror of the situation or how it was just a big joke, you know. It was just a big joke.
It's amazing how and it's one of the questions I've always had in politics, and you can look in Arab countries as well, is why do people choose misery instead of a way out of their life? And I think it's because after a while, when you get fed a steady diet of a certain kind of media and you don't have access to any other alternative information, you know, you start to believe it.
Yeah,
you can't really blame the people. You have to blame the system. What's that?
So much. They feed you so much trash. You just, you know, and then like this Jim Cameron for WDAM-TV in Hattiesburg, he comes on and he looks like a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy. He talks nice. And yet he's selling you a load of crap and you buy into it because, well, heck, you don't know any better. And that's, you know, it's like in the 2004 presidential election. If I hadn't been working with the Kerry campaign, I wouldn't have known half the truth. But if working with them, I got the story. And then, of course, liberal radio started coming around, and that's really made a big difference. But
you can only get it on the Internet, right?
Yeah, and there's the problem.
I mean, that's again, part of the problem in Mississippi. I don't know. It'd be very interesting. I'd love to talk with some of your neighbors, Sarge, about, you know, why, because you're the exception. You're you know, the prophet in showing the light into the tunnel. But really, it's your neighbors that I'm trying to understand more than you. I understand. And what is it about people that leads them? You know what I think it is? I think they have such a profound distrust of government that when the government does lousy things, as your state and federal government have done, people just turn around and say, "See, I told you government couldn't work."
Well,
instead of working for a government that can work. I mean, you know, Lyndon Johnson, the last Southern conservative. Well, he wasn't even conservative; he was liberal, but he spoke to the South. Bill Clinton was a native of the South, but he didn't speak to the South the way Lyndon Johnson did.
Well,
and
I was going to say,
in the war on poverty, he got people to really think that they could make a better life for themselves. Go ahead, make your point.
One thing, like in Clinton's administration, before Bush took office, this area was exploding with factories and jobs coming into it, and we were in a boom. Within a year of Bush in office, all that was gone. And now,
now, do, now people not see that? I mean, tell me what your neighbors are saying, Sarge. What are your is it all religion? Is it, you know, George Bush is going to, you know, make black women not have abortions? Is, I mean, what is it about?
It is the religious issue. It really is. It's also this, well, he's liberal.
Fundamentalist Christians outside the South are not as you know, pro-Bush as the ones in the South. I mean, that's what this study, and, you know, it's just a study. I can't say that they have the definitive study on it, but it's a very interesting study. They looked at every single attitude, and the only thing they could find that really made Southerners and Northerners jump out in difference was race. They even looked at fundamentalist Christians. And, again, the fundamentalist Christians were supportive of Bush in both the North and the South. But if you take out the racial attitudes, it was the same amount of support.
Well, you still got this religious thing like, oh, well, they won't let us put our Ten Commandments in the courthouse. And
yeah, that's going to put it on their table. Like, that's going to give them a job. Like, that's going to make factories rebuilt. Stephen Colbert, who sometimes is, I don't know, just stupid, but sometimes he hits it right on the mark. He's really funny. And he had a Georgia congressman, Lynn Westmoreland, on the air. And I'll never forget this. And he talked about, you know, what this congressman felt was the most important thing. And he said, I want to put the Ten Commandments in every American school. So Stephen Colbert said, Congressman, what are the Ten Commandments? He said, what are they? Yeah, what are they? Don't kill. Yeah, that's one of them. Don't lie, which isn't one of them. Don't steal. Okay, that's one of them. He couldn't remember the other eight.
Well, you know, there's this
guy
that's on my messenger in Alabama, and he's got this little thing that says, all say Merry Christmas, screw the ACLU.
Like, that is what's going to solve America's problems.
Yeah.
It's all about exclusion. Let's exclude as many people as we possibly can, and America will be a better place.
Yeah. Well, look, I need to go, and thank you, Mark.
Appreciate your dogs. Maybe they're trying to tell you, like Barney's trying to tell Bush, to get out of Iraq. So go help your dogs. Thanks for calling in, Sarge. I appreciate it. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're just chatting in the chat room. By the way, folks, if you listen to the show and you haven't been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, check it out, join in, and you can make comments. I was just going over the Ten Commandments, thus proving that I, unlike Congressman Westmoreland of Georgia, do know what the Ten Commandments are, and was putting them on the blog. Another things I want to discuss before this show is out. One of the main things I want to talk about is this school integration decisions that are coming before the Supreme Court. I think that they're complex. People misunderstand what they are. Let's talk about them. One's in Louisville and one's in Seattle. Now, in Louisville, you have students assigned to schools based on where they live. And if you want a transfer out of that, so you have neighborhood schools, no busing, unless you want a transfer. If you want a transfer, then they look at the question of whether the student body is how African American it is, how black it is. Right now in Louisville, 34% are black, about one third are black, two thirds are white. So Louisville said, look, we don't want a school to go below 15% black or above 50% black. You can go to your neighborhood school, but if you want to transfer, we don't want schools to be more than half black or less than 15% black in a school system that's one-third black. Seems pretty obvious to me, particularly when you look at the fact that Louisville was intentionally discriminating against blacks for so many years and under a court order. Now they want to voluntarily integrate their schools, and that's up for review by the United States Supreme Court, with conservatives arguing they shouldn't be able to do so. The Seattle plan, a little bit different. Basically you pick three of Seattle's 10 high schools, and if you, in your order of preference, and if you can't get what you want, you can look preference to if you have siblings attending the school, brothers and sisters. Then second choice is based on how close you are to a school, unless the exception is if the racial markup differs from the district by more than 15%, and this is a district that's 60% non-white, 40% white. Now, what these two plans, Louisville and Seattle, have in common is they're trying to keep our schools integrated. Now, why is it good to keep our schools integrated? Well, one, we can certainly talk about the fact that to live in America, we have to understand each other. And we're never going to understand each other if we live in our lily-white neighborhoods, or our all-black neighborhoods for that matter, and only associate with people who are our same race or our same religion or our same financial background. Well, there's no way we're going to have the kind of empathy for our fellow American citizens if we live in these isolated ghettos. Now, to me, though, the most persuasive argument for why we need integration comes from an unlikely source. It comes from George Will, conservative commentator, who I agree with from time to time, but he couldn't be more wrong than in an op-ed he posted last Sunday called Clueless in Seattle. Let me read to you just the very first sentence of his op-ed. George Will writes, Seattle, this city's school district decided in 2000 that because the son of Jill Kerfist and the daughter of Winnie Backwitz are white, they should be assigned to an inferior and distant high school. Let's leave out distance for a second. Because they're white, they should be assigned to an inferior high school. Think about what George Will said. If you're African-American, you get it immediately. I would hope most of my listeners get it immediately. If you're white, you're assigned to an inferior school. Where all the blacks are, I guess. Why should we have inferior schools at all? White parents are incensed because their kids can't go to the few schools in Seattle that are good schools without caring a bit about the majority black who are consigned to the awful schools. Why can't we have all good schools? Why can't we work to make the good schools better? Indeed, it seems that unless you put white kids and rich kids in the so-called inferior schools, they never get better. Brown versus Board of Education pointed out that when you have separate black and white schools, they are inherently unequal. The white kids are treated better than the black kids. So George Will is incensed. These parents are incensed. How dare my daughter, just because she's white, go to an inferior school? Without asking the question, what about all the kids that are black that are currently in this inferior school? Why should any child have to go to an inferior school? Well, one answer, obviously, is if we pay teachers more, we wouldn't have such inferior schools. We wouldn't have such inferior teachers. We'd have some of our best and brightest coming out of colleges and choosing to be teachers. As I pointed out in this program before, in the 1940s, the average college graduate made a little less than the average teacher. Today, the average college graduate makes twice what the average teacher makes. In the United States, not in Europe, folks. In Europe, they care about education. So you see, the only way we can ever improve schools for black kids, unfortunately, is to put some white kids there because people have written off blacks, I guess. I found George Will's article very interesting. How dare she be assigned an inferior school just because she's white? George, who are the other kids at that school? One thing, though, I don't agree with the African-American community on, and I think that Nancy Pelosi made a terrific choice, is when they were promoting Alcee Hastings, some, and I don't, obviously the whole community wasn't, but the Congressional Black Caucus was promoting Alcee Hastings to be the intelligence chairman. The ranking Democrat was Jane Harman. I happen to like Jane Harman, but I do think she was a little bit too easy on George Bush. I know Nancy Pelosi thinks that, and therefore she shouldn't run the committee. There's also some personal bad blood between the two women. Number two was Alcee Hastings. Alcee Hastings is an African-American. He's also a formerly impeached federal judge. Now, it was a long time ago. It was back in the 80s. But you know what? He was not only impeached. He was removed from office. He got the two-thirds vote from the Senate necessary to remove him from office. Now, you know, okay, he's come back. He's been elected by his constituents. He shouldn't be a chairman. And as far as the, you know, we're going to have a number of African-American chairmen. We're going to have Charlie Rangel, who I really like, to be the head of Ways and Means, decide tax policy. I also really like John Conyers. He's going to be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. A guy like Benny Thompson, heading the Homeland Security Committee, which oversees FEMA. Those are three very powerful positions. So I'm very glad that Nancy Pelosi has decided not to promote Alcee Hastings and instead to go with Sylvester Reyes. Frankly, for one thing, it's good to have a Latino chair a powerful committee, and intelligence is a powerful committee, and he doesn't have the baggage that Alcee Hastings has. Last comment before we close, I want to talk about Lebanon, because it's interesting in listening to Sarge talk about people in the South and how religion is controlling their lives, and they don't really see outside their own media spin. They don't look outside the spin. To me, nowhere more is that clear than in Lebanon. In Lebanon, you have Iran and Syria trying to take over the Lebanese government. Syria controlled Lebanon for many years, invaded, had troops, occupied it. Now Iran, via Hezbollah, is trying to take over, even though the majority is not Shiite and doesn't want to live in a conservative, anti-woman, religious theocracy. Lebanon used to be the Paris of the Middle East. But the Christians, the Sunnis, the non-Shiites, and there are a lot of others, Greek Orthodox and Druze, they don't have the arms Iran has been arming Hezbollah, and they don't have the arms. And so it's understandable why they fear they have to do what Hezbollah wants them to do. Hezbollah has more arms. They've been armed by Iran. And here's a government that shows the problem with arming these terrorist groups and allowing it to go forward. And I blame the international community. The United Nations passed a resolution 2 years ago to disarm Hezbollah. You've got France and Italy and 15,000 troops in the region ever since Hezbollah started attacking Israel and Israel fought back. Why aren't they disarming Hezbollah? If they could, they could save the Lebanese state and democracy and maybe recreate a Paris in the Middle East. Why aren't they doing it? Because they're afraid to. They're afraid to fight. They're afraid that this isn't worth it. Well, let me tell you something. This is worth it. This is a case where the majority of the Lebanese do not want to be taken over. They are looking for help from the West. This isn't like Iraq. And I'm sorry to say that, well, the West isn't providing the help they need. That's all for the Inside Scoop, folks. Tune in tonight and tomorrow for my debate show with Republican strategist Mike Lane. We're going to talk about the exchange between Senator Webb and George Bush, who asked Webb, how's your boy in Iraq? But for now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
Situation where the voting is by paper ballot and where, okay, let's say you have a room with all the ballots, right, and it's arranged in a circle around where the ballot box is, and you vote and you go right to the ballot box and you put it there, and that ballot box is right there in the middle of the room with a camera on it, with a guard on it maybe, you know, where it's watched constantly. Chain of custody is the term that we in the election biz like to use. I'm not in the election biz, but you know
that
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and this way, and then when they do count it, they count it right there in the precinct. You dump them all out on the table and you say, okay, this is a vote for the Democrat, and you put it in the pile, you know, for the Democrat. This is a vote for the Republican, and you put it there. And you do that for each race, one at a time. And you have a clear thing, and everybody publicly is right there. You have it with cameras on them, and you do it right there. And they put it up, they got a big chalkboard or a big whiteboard, and they write, these are the results. Democrats, X amount. Republicans, Y amount. Other parties, this amount. And that gets phoned in to the next level. You get the precinct level, then you have, what, the regional level, the district level, then the state level, then the national level for whatever you're doing. You do it like that, there's still going to be some fraud, but you're going to eliminate so much of it, it's going to be negligible.
Well, I like what you guys, the whole network, is saying. You know, you're in the process, I think, of wising up a lot of people, and desperately it needs to happen. I do understand... Well, that Ron Wyden, the senator, Democrat from Oregon, is asking that all states vote as they do there. And that is that each person gets an absentee ballot, fills it out, and either hand delivers it or puts it in the mailbox. And
right.
They are then counted on, of all things, Diebold vote counting machines, but then the machines will decide how they want it to go, but you don't have the paper. It's there to be recounted if they rig it, so...
Well, they don't even, you know, I don't even trust the optical voting machines myself. Count them all by hand. What, you know, how come Canada can do it and we can't? How come Germany can do it and we can't? France, Spain, England, Portugal, Italy. The Italians, for Christ's sake, they do it better than we do, okay? And the Italians are known for, you know, not being very organized about these things, right?
I understand.
And if they can do it, why can't we?
This last election, Bush loaned his good friend, Berlusconi, a few dozen of his favorite machines.
Yeah.
And they turned 8.5 million votes, which they thought would be enough. Because the absentee, the exit polls and everything showed that, but it ended up that Berlusconi just barely lost. They did, again, they had miscalculated how many votes they needed to switch. But.
Right.
And, yes, you know, all over Europe, Belgium, Greece, everywhere, they vote in a verifiable, provable way. And only here could they pull a trick like that and have the people, the Congress, tolerating it. Do stay with your good efforts, sir.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, we'll do it again here soon.
Oh, sure. I look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Sure. And again, I'm going to talk about this. We got the news coming up here in just a few minutes. We're not quite ready to go just yet. I want to thank Dave and the Sarge for calling. And before we go off to break, the number again is 1-877-443-2366. I'm going to be talking about this in a little bit more detail after the break. I was hoping to get my good friend Ben Birch from the White Rose Society on. I don't know if he got my email. He was going to call in on Friday, but of course I wasn't doing the show on Friday. We found out. But yeah, it's remarkable to me, not so much that there's cheating going on, because you know that's how humans are. You know, that's how some people in the human race are. They're just going to cheat. But it's remarkable to me that we tolerate it. And it's just the same kind of apathy that leads us to think, well, we don't really care about what's going on in Iraq. By the way, the Iraq war now has officially lasted longer than World War II. So let's put it this way. Liberal Democrats defeated two of the most powerful military powers in the world at the time, the Germans and the Japanese, and a Republican Congress and a Republican president takes even longer to defeat a bunch of people out in the street with machine guns. Really, go, very smart guys, really well done. Like that you know, that we had that video on my site where they have, I guess they're U.S. soldiers. They're in a Humvee, and the picture is taken like from the back of a truck. And the Humvee or whatever vehicle it is moving away from a bunch of kids who are running, and the guy's holding up a water bottle. Say, come on, you want it? Come on, run. And they're just seeing how long they can make this Iraqi for the water. And the comment that I made is, yeah, I know. I hear all the stuff about schools being painted, blah, 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 blah. But you know what? There's an old saying when you work for a company that one, oh, crap, wipes out about 10 attaboys. And we've had lots of oh craps out there. And oh crap, it's time for the top of the hour and the news. And again, the number to call in, 1-877-443-2366. And we'll be back to talk about election reform here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
News Network.